Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 407, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Lisa Hendrickson from CallThatGirl.biz and the Office 365 show. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm good. How you doing, Jeff?
I am doing excellent. Trying to relax a little bit and do a little podcasting. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I've had a long day today, and I'm going to tell you that doing shows after a long day of work is kind of like tiring, but you know, it's what we do.
Right.
We have to keep the show on the road, work all day, do it at night.
So when you contacted me, we were talking about some of the new things that you were actually doing in your business. So what are some of those things? I know you've kind of changed the focus of your show. You went from basically a remote support show. You're going to an Office 365, and that's because you're hearing from a lot of people that they want to know more about Office 365, how to support it, how to put it out there, how to get people and their customers to buy into that whole system and to be able to, make money off of that.
Well, I think what happened, Jeff, was that the remote support show started off with me talking about remote support, but that was last year when I was doing just a ton of tech support too. And then once I started working with Chris, I started offsetting the tech support and I could focus on my Outlook work and marketing for Outlook and just diving in. Well, the problem that happened was I started getting more and more calls for Office 365 stuff, snags with admin controls, SharePoint, OneDrive. So then I started marketing Office 365 as well. And since probably last spring, that's all I do now. I rarely do tech support. So it's kind of been fun. But on the other hand, I keep finding all these new snaggy issues. And so back when I was doing the remote support show, I started noticing that my snaggy issues started becoming Outlook and Office 365. And so when I took the break and moved down to Florida, I was like, you know what? I'm going to change the whole show to just be about what I do only. And that does include a lot of remote support because that's all I do. So after I started noticing that the change was happening, people started emailing me more and more and saying, okay, I have a problem with this thing with Office 365. And the questions in the fan mail started coming about the Office 365 stuff more. So that's why the show got changed up pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was a good move because there's just so much to learn. Never ends.
It's one of those things in this business. If you're learning something, it can be frustrating and fun at the same time.
Well, today's job I did was not fun or frustrating. It was just kind of like, well, here's what it is I signed up to help this lady with a SharePoint. I was hired to do some SharePoint consulting. I've done this in the past. I quote 4 hours. The reason being is I do a lot of testing. I log into the two computers. I install it. I do the testing. I do the training, configuring, and that's about a four-hour job. Well, just in the past, I don't know how long since I helped somebody last, they've changed the SharePoint for the PC to not just be this easy little breezy thing. Now you have to download OneDrive and then sync it. Now, if anybody out there is listening and knows of a different way, please email me like as soon as you hear this, because obviously I might be doing it wrong, but I had to spend 2 hours just configuring the OneDrive to work with the SharePoint to be a favorite on their computer to act as a mapped drive.
Wow.
I know. And so I spent 2 hours on Saturday messing with just one computer, getting it set up. And then today I spent an hour and 20 minutes on the other computer with the same snags. And what I'm getting is synchronizing errors with Groove. Do you know what Groove is?
Yeah, I've heard of it and it's on my system, but I don't use it.
Exactly. So most people don't use Groove. It's not like a standard software of the Office suite that we need. So it kept giving me Groove errors and I'm going, And it's really difficult to uninstall stuff like that because it's just part of the package.
Right.
So basically, you have to start doing research and figuring out the snags and why things won't sync. And I ended up at the hour 20 mark seeing two red X's on the SharePoint folders. They're not synchronizing, neither one of them. So what I do, I went on the Microsoft forums. They said to repair OneDrive. And guess what? Deleted everything out of SharePoint from the computers.
Oh.
So, but luckily, it's still on the SharePoint server, but not in the files. So really what you do is just strip out everything and have to start fresh. And I'm like, so now I have an appointment with her tomorrow. And I called her and said, look, you know, I've done this before. Otherwise, I wouldn't have told you I could do this. And I've had some snags. And she goes, you know what? I really don't even care, Lisa, how long it takes. I just really would like it to work. So just take your time and do it right. And I was like, all right. Now, I'm not going to bill her for every, you know, this might take me 10 hours.
Right, right.
See? But I'll be fair on the billing. But geez, they change it. You never used to have to download OneDrive before.
You know, I'm surprised that, yeah, you know, on the Windows 8 systems, I mean, OneDrive is essential, I think, to the operating system anymore. But back on the Windows 7 and below, you really don't have to have that OneDrive installed necessarily. It's like moving forward, but not necessarily moving backward. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, they've really married the SharePoint and OneDrive together pretty tightly. And I don't know if it's because of the marketing, because if you go to the Office 365 sales pages, they don't talk about SharePoint at all. It is not even on there. You know what's on there? 1 terabyte of file sharing space, which is OneDrive.
Okay.
So they sucker people in with, buy our products, you get 1 terabyte of space, but when you're using SharePoint, you don't get 1 terabyte of space.
Okay.
No.
So what is the point of SharePoint anymore when you do have OneDrive where you can basically sync like a Google Drive or anything of the sorts that's new today?
Well, what it comes down to, and this is how I try to explain it to my clients, is OneDrive is, well, let's step back actually a little step further or behind. So if you go to buy Office 365 for business, if you don't remember on the last show we did, I told you there were 6 packages, right?
Right.
The Exchange, the Office Suite, Link, OneDrive, Yammer, and I think the Office, right? And Exchange, SharePoint, I'm trying to think here. Anyway, so when you go to OneDrive on Office 365, what it basically is, it's for personal use, okay? So like, let's say you're at home and you have it set up on a work computer. OneDrive is for personal only, it should be. SharePoint is for sharing within a company infrastructure with permission-based rights. So like the vice president of the company can see all the files, but maybe the general laborers can't see, you know, what the vice president can see.
Okay.
So it's SharePoint is a more corporate, it's supposed to be used for intranet, and a lot of huge corporations use it. I worked on it in 2006 at one of my corporate jobs. I've talked about it before on the shows, I know. I mean, it was a huge, 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 huge thing. That's where all the Excel files were kept and everything else. And we actually had a SharePoint administrator that ran it. But see, when people are looking at Office 365, now they're going, oh, I want OneDrive, and then I want my whole team to share it. Well, when the OneDrive is no different than Dropbox.
Right. Well, and that's what I would have thought, because a lot of people use Dropbox for collaboration, you know, and sharing files and stuff like that. So it almost seems like that's the direction OneDrive is going to go. And I'm almost wondering if OneDrive is going to be both corporate and, home user.
Well, at this point, if I can't figure out this SharePoint issue, and maybe I'll explain it again so people understand what I'm really frustrated with, is that you could map SharePoint to look like a shared map drive, like in, you know, like the H drive at a corporation, the L drive. But the problem is when people travel, the access isn't the same. They lose the connection if they're not on the VPN or at their home, right?
Okay.
So the way I used to configure SharePoint is through the sync tool and a couple other things. It would add it as a favorite in your file explorer.
Okay.
And the favorite was just like a shortcut right to the server. And now, just like I said, recently, this OneDrive is downloaded now. So you have to have OneDrive for business. SharePoint is additional. And OneDrive lets you share a folder with everybody. Because you ever seen that? Share with everyone.
Yes.
And then any other files that you put in there are yours privately that people can't see.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. So it's really not secure. Let's say you accidentally put your private files in that one. Everybody can see them. But as far as I know, it's difficult. It's not like Dropbox where you can just right click and give people permission.
Okay.
I might be wrong on that, but I haven't worked on a OneDrive in a while. But on another note, this other client of mine is working on a OneDrive where he uploaded a full terabyte of data.
Wow.
Yeah, let's wow that one, because that is a problem that's really not meant to be a server. You know what I mean? OneDrive is not supposed to be a server. I didn't know he put up a terabyte. So it's taking weeks and weeks and weeks to synchronize this data. And some of these files are huge. So I didn't know that went up on the OneDrive, so we're just waiting.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. Hopefully he's got some sort of local backup too, but besides just his computer on OneDrive. Yeah. No pun intended. Yeah, that's a lot. I mean,
that comes from a person that has a server. They're trying to get off it. Same thing with this other client with the SharePoint today. She's on Dropbox. She wants to move to something a little more professional, you know, the Microsoft suite. Sure. Well, if I can ever figure it out, she has a small team. It'll be easy in the beginning until I have to start digging down deep again. But yeah, it's I just set up a company in Texas, 12 people, SharePoint. I configured all 12 computers perfectly in no time flat. How can that take me like 2 hours to do 12 computers and I'm still on hers having a huge problem? This just doesn't make sense to me, Jeff. Microsoft just loves changing stuff, yet they don't send out a news alert to say, oh, by the way, now if you try to configure SharePoint onto a computer, you're going to have to do this, this, and that. It just makes no sense. So that was my snag, one of my snags today. My other snag was, I had a client that wanted to do a migration on Wednesday, but they were like, hey, can we just do it today real quick? Okay.
Can we do it today real quick? I got to love that one.
Let's just do it real quick. And the reason why is because the person, the owner, I gave them administrative rights early. So guess what happens when you do that?
Yeah, they do things they ought not to.
I was like, are you configuring your DNS settings behind my back? Like, please tell me you're not doing anything with the DNS. And he said no, and I laughed and I said, then what'd you do wrong? And he goes, I don't know, but it don't work. And I said, okay, well, luckily I didn't have any hardcore appointments today, so we moved the migration up to today. And he had this is the second time I've seen this month, IMAP configured with a PST file. And it's breaking and it's corrupted. It should be an OST file.
Okay.
If it's on the newer Outlook. The older ones, I think, used to do a PST file. I work with Outlook 2013 so much now, I get them messed up. But his file was definitely corrupted and it wouldn't export out nicely. So we just said, we're not going to back it up. And then we just went and did the migration. But now we're sitting there watching all the mail upload to the server. And I told him it might be done by morning.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
Okay.
Well, because I don't use migration whizzes, Jeff. Like, you do it in the background. I do it right on their computer because there's always a snag or something, you know. They usually have four calendars and many contact lists, so it's just easier to manually do it for me. But so anyway, that ended on a nice note. He's just sitting there uploading right now. And then I have a guy from last week that called and said, you know what, I'm missing a lot of mail from like this date to this date. Well, I tried to do something sneaky so he could use his computer. I did the migration on my computer. So I downloaded his mail. I made a backup. And once I cut over to the server, I imported it from my computer because I was like, hey, I've got a fast computer, fast internet. Yeah, that file was corrupted too. And then I had to fix it and then get 8 gigs up to the server. And apparently it's not as fast as I thought, because it's still chucking away right now, churning and burning, I call it, trying to get the mail up.
So with saying all that, that brings me to a good point here, that what is the best way that a person should be backing up their PST file, which was 2010 and below, and their OST file on 2013, and I'm sure from now on? What's the best way to back that up? Because I've ran into a lot of people who have corrupted PST files or OST files, and there's nothing I can do for them. Yeah. They're pretty much their hose, because that was their only copy.
Well, you know what? Just to let you know that you can still use PST files in Outlook 2013.
Okay.
If you set up an IMAP account like Gmail, Gmail, Yahoo, AOL on IMAP, it just makes it OST file by default.
Oh, okay.
Which can hose up people, because guess why? They think that they can just take that file, that OST, and move it to another computer. You can't do that with an OST file. It's like an offline sync tool. That's what the OST means.
Okay.
So you can't just open it and go, there's my stuff. You actually have to go and download the OST converter tool that costs you about $100, and it will turn it into a PST file.
Right. Because I had to do that on mine here about a month and a half ago, and I had the OST files, and there was nothing I could do to import them back in Outlook 2013. So, and I didn't really care, because all my, you know, emails are IMAP. Yeah. So I just basically put in the information manually and they downloaded, and I was back up and running.
Well, there are some people that don't, they have it in IMAP, but you know, things get corrupted on the IMAP server side. Sometimes I fixed a couple of them. One was 16 gigs and it was just actually corrupted. The actual data file was only about 4 gigs.
Oh, wow.
But that's what can, and it took this guy 2 days to Dropbox it to me from New York. And, well, not that it matters, it's the internet. But yeah, I had to fix that. And I was like, wow, you're down to just 4 gigs. And people will be working off a bad corrupted OST file, or it's usually the OST file. Now, the nice thing is, if you think that it's the OST file, you can just blow it away and open Outlook and it'll make a new one.
Oh, okay.
Because it's IMAP, it's on the server.
Right.
So you can just go delete the OST file, open up Outlook, you'll get a fresh one, should be good to go. But sometimes they need the data that's in that one. That's why you have to go get the converter tool.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah. So $100 for a converter tool. And so does it basically convert it from an OST to a PST file?
Yeah. Have you ever used the Stellar tools?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I have almost all of their tools. I pay for the technical license too, because then I can have it forever.
Okay.
I use them all the time. Yeah, it's pretty much $100 for a one-time use. A tech license is $200 or $300, depends on how expensive it is. But I've helped out a few techs before. If they want to, you know, Dropbox it over, I'll run it for them. You know, it's not something I do every day. But yeah, I know a lot of people don't know how to fix those things, so it's... it's helpful, you know, like if you ever run across it again, I can, you know, help you out.
Okay.
Now, yeah, Stellar has a lot. It's called Stellar Phoenix, I think.
S-T-E-L-L-A-R?
Yeah, I think it's actually called Stellar Phoenix.
Okay.
We can put it in the show notes. Yeah. But, I mean, I've got their OST converter, their PST repair, which that's just like a step up from the one on the computer. I've got the...
But does it work?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I buy the tech licenses for it. It's so good. I've got the OST to PST converter, the OLM to PST converter. That is the Mac converter, because on Macs it makes an OLM file. And if you need it to be a PST, got to have the converter.
Gotcha. Okay. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. You see why Outlook makes a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. All the acronyms.
Yeah. I have another tool, too. I think it's... I'll have to look it up and tell you in the show notes, but I've got at least two installed here that I use often.
Okay.
But anyway, back to the other question you had about the, I think, backing up the PST file?
Yes.
So here's the rule of thumb is that with Exchange migrations, I always make my own backup, and here's why, because they can be corrupted. So I just make a nice backup that I call Lisa backup with the date.
Okay.
And I spend the time to do it, because it's easier to just do it the right way than to fix.
Right.
A lot of people, if you don't back it up and you try to import it and it's broken, it can take hours to fix. So I just make sure that I do my own. And then what happens is if you close Outlook, you can make copies of any of the PST files by just right-clicking and putting them on an external hard drive. But you have to have Outlook closed.
Okay, so when you're doing a backup, is this just an export that you're doing from the file system, or how do you do a backup properly?
Well, here's the thing is you can do an export. I have some videos out there on YouTube also. Okay. But if the export fails, then I just do it by hand. I have to move every folder by hand into the new server, which is what I had to do today. Because you can actually, with IMAP, you can time out and it won't let you finish. And sometimes it gives you weird errors and the PST file is actually broken. And it's sometimes not repairable with the scan, what's it called? The scan PST file.
Okay.
Inbox repair tool. Yeah. That's why a lot of people are just like, I'm sick of this stuff on my computer. I just want to be on a server.
Well, for the residential clients, I've pushed most people to, getting off of that, Outlook on their system or, whatever, and just using whatever email they're using web-based, because that way, if their computer blows up, it doesn't matter. We log back in their web-based mail and they're good to go. But from a business standpoint, a lot of people live with all the tools inside of Outlook and everything else. So you got to have those things.
People don't have a choice. I think that when you start at a job, they set you up with email and it's always Outlook.
Sure.
I mean, I barely remember Lotus Notes, Jeff. I mean, we used Lotus Notes in college. And then at IBM, I used Lotus Notes when I worked for them. Okay. They're an IBM shop. It's their own product. After that, I've never seen another email program ever since. it runs the world, I think. But the thing is, people don't even use what it's capable of. They just do the email. They like their folders. It's in their head. That's the other problem. I think a lot of people get talked into going to Gmail. I think I told you this before. And then they get onto the Gmail servers and they're like, what? I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. So then they want to come back to Outlook. Well, I can set up their Gmail in Outlook, but then you get the clunky crap Gmail gives you, all those dumb sump folders and copies. Have you ever seen that?
No, I personally have over 5 Gmail accounts attached to my Outlook, and I don't have a problem with any of them. But that's...
Well, what it is basically Gmail has an inbox and then a subfolder of Gmail that has like important, starred, favorites, junk,
sure,
and junk.
Sure, sure.
And a lot of people don't know that, I have a guy that hires me every quarter just to clean up his mail because the synchronizing gets stuck. He does so much mail and he's in Outlook. So I'm like, well, but he's addicted. He could just go to Gmail directly, but he likes the look and,
You know what I like about Outlook? The one reason I run it?
Why?
Because the signatures are much better.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, better than anything else out there. I mean, seriously, that's why I do it.
You know what? I can absolutely tell in a heartbeat when I get an email from someone on Gmail. All of the signatures are paragraphed apart.
Right.
So there's a space in between. It drives me nuts. Now, my signature has graphics, and it probably drives people nuts, but...
Mine does too. That's what I like about it, though.
I do like their signature. I like a lot of it, I guess, but I don't take advantage of everything it offers either.
Right.
I share my calendar with the techs and they can see it. And I don't even keep a contact list, Jeff. I can help somebody manage their contacts, like 11,000 of them. I can help them figure it out, sort it, destroy it. I have like 100 people in mine. I don't even use it.
Wow. Now, so what do you use for a phone then?
Well, I have 2 iPhones.
Okay.
Now, here's what's funny is that in my phone contacts, I'm looking at it right now, I actually have like 8,000 people in my phone by accident, because somehow a long time ago I added LinkedIn, the social sharing.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
But see, some of those people I do actually text to and call. So when I take it off the phone, they just are just a number now.
Right.
So I just said, screw it. I'll leave it in there. I didn't want to deal with it. And I have a favorites on my iPhone. And that's the people I talk to all the time.
Okay.
So I'm not really worried. But yeah. But I think with the amount of social media I do, I can't have one database. That's too crazy.
Well, no, and that's, you know, I live on an Android phone, so I have to have my contacts have to be in the Gmail, Google yeah. universe, because, you know, basically I can drop my phone into a toilet and go grab another one and log in and I'm back up and running in, 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. So well, we've talked about that, right? Yeah. Android versus iPhone.
Yeah.
Android, Gmail, iPhone, Outlook.
Yep.
The married couples.
Well, now your contacts are actually kept in the iCloud on iPhone, correct?
No, that's a whole new topic.
Oh, okay.
That iCloud, we could talk about that for an hour. I actually use Exchange.
Okay, so you have your own Exchange. Okay, I got you. Yep. I got you. No, that
like
makes
I
sense.
Said, it was last year or something. I added the LinkedIn to my Exchange as a subfolder, and that was a mistake because now they're all wrapped together. But I just haven't cleaned it up. But the iCloud, now I. Well, for anybody that's going to start promoting that you can help with this stuff, I don't know how to say it. iCloud is one of the scariest things I've seen for people that don't know how to set it up. And trying to fix it can be really, really stressful. So I've learned to be patient and I've helped people. I quote them 2 hours.
Okay.
I'm like, if you're lucky, it'll be less. But I just quote 2 hours to help, and we go through every device. We synchronize stuff. I have to download the control panel. I have to fix it. I have to get on their device. I don't remote into their iPads and stuff, but I have to do the slow walk them through it.
Right.
Once I'm done, they're thrilled. I'm like, for an extra 40, you could have been on Exchange.
right, exactly.
So a lot of times the calls I get, I will tell people, okay, you're in a mess with iCloud and this is for your business account, like your domain account. I say, well, I can spend 2 hours with you fixing that, or for $300, I can move you over to Exchange, and then that thing just synchronizes flawlessly and they see the investment.
Gotcha. So now when you're talking about so what's the difference between Exchange, hosted Exchange, because a lot of technicians out there are probably looking at this stuff and going, well, what do you mean? I got to run a server. I got to, do this or that, So there, it's a little confusing with all the different ways that you can do email. So what would be your best explanation for that?
Well, I'll start with hosted Exchange is outdated.
Okay.
It used to be the next best thing. I haven't sold it in 2+ years probably, but back in the day, GoDaddy, had hosted Exchange, was the big hype. Other companies had it too. And it basically gives you less space and it was clunkier. It didn't run as smooth. Now, Microsoft's Exchange Online is just like hosted Exchange. It's in the cloud. They give you 50 gigs of space, which I wouldn't even doubt they'll make that unlimited at some point soon here, because it all, evens out in the wash. Thing is, if Outlook can handle that much, but
yeah, really.
So hosted Exchange is old and clunky, and Exchange Online is the new product from Microsoft, which is really nice. And it to me, with Outlook 2013, it just runs really smooth. Very few, legs. It can hold a lot of mail. Like you can open up really fast documents. I mean, if you're going to do Microsoft Exchange, get the new Office product. They just are really nice, real fast. Pop and IMAP are very outdated, but some people like it still. Pop is a one-time download, which you can keep a copy on the server, which can cause a lot of problems for people because they might have 15,000 emails that are still up on the server.
Yeah, and anytime they log into another device, it all of a sudden starts to download all those emails.
Yep, and if there's a glitch, even worse, just out of the blue, it will download them anyway. And so I've told people at that point, let's move you off, or I just fix it for them, whatever. IMAP is synchronizing, which that does not include contacts or calendar. It's email only.
Gotcha.
Pop is email only too. So it's just email. IMAP is just email. Exchange Online is the full everything. And hosted Exchange is the outdated that no one's doing. If you call GoDaddy, they will say, no, we put you on Office 365 now. And they don't really use the words hosted or Exchange anymore. So Microsoft doesn't call it Exchange on their marketing, Jeff.
Right. I was going to say, Lisa, if you have it, so back in the day when these businesses had servers and they would say, hey, we're doing an Exchange migration. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit different than what we're doing in the cloud nowadays, correct?
Yeah. You know what? Exchange, old Exchange, which if you talk to a server person, they call it Exchange.
Okay.
That was a hardware server that was in-house. And it had the Microsoft Exchange server software on there that had to be maintained, updated. The mailboxes were there. And I'm not too familiar with, you know, hardware servers, but they had to point it to, you know, the DNS for it to roll. But I didn't get into the management of it.
Okay.
But if the server went down, mail was down.
Right.
So the features of it being in the cloud, which I've moved a lot of people off hardware servers to the cloud, it's not difficult because I go and take a backup of their mail, then I switch the DNS settings and put them up on the cloud.
Okay.
And I've even done it behind IT guys' backs sometimes. Company will call and say, look, he doesn't know what he's doing. We got to get off this and I'll go fix it and take him off.
So basically, if you have a domain, meaning you have, you know, your whatever at xyzcompany.com, you basically can take that and point that to from any mail service that you might be using now using your domain, and you can basically point it to Exchange, and you have basically the same things. Now, when you're backing up the email, though, are you manually backing up the email from, you know, Outlook or whatever they're using, or how would you go about doing that?
Well, can you hear me okay, Jeff?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, sorry. I just had a little blip here. Okay, so I couldn't hear all of it. But so let's pretend that a company had a server in the corner and they were like, Lisa, it's about to die. We need you to get us to the cloud by tomorrow. I remote into all of their Outlook accounts. I manually back up their email to a PST file. I back up their calendar and their contacts. Once everybody's safe and backed up, I go into their website control panel. And then I update the DNS records to match Microsoft's. But I mean, there's more to it than that. You know, you have to actually set up the Microsoft account and everything.
Sure.
And then you go and update that. And then the server starts talking to, you know, the website control panel, and you're good to go. Then what I do is I go back into the Outlook and I set up in the same profile a new Exchange setup. So, like when you're in the control panel, you go to mail.
Right.
Okay. Then you go into the profile and you can add a new account.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then when you're in there, I already added to their existing because guess why? They have spent a lot of time on that profile, the settings, the signatures, all the little stuff, and they want it perfect.
Right.
So I just import it right into the current profile to save the steps. A lot of techs just make a new profile and tell them that they're fresh, you know, but I kind of try to take that extra step. I've seen it done. They don't do any of the cleanup, you know, to make it the nice experience for the client, which I do. I pride myself on the perfection of it because it takes me 5 minutes. I know what they're going to call back for, Jeff. That's the problem. They're going to call back and say, you know what, this isn't the same. So I just fix it before they call.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So there is a lot of information when it comes down to Office 365.
Oh, yes. And it's really part of the new show I'm going to do. My next show is actually going to be probably a series, Jeff.
Okay. I can see that.
I don't think I can get it done in one session. But
right.
The first one is going to be understanding Office 365, not just for technicians, but for everybody. Because I've actually been requested by techs to really just be simple.
Okay.
So, and I'm marketing to end users too, because my shows are going to be on Podnuts as an audio download and on YouTube as a show.
Okay.
Like a fully produced show. So I want the general public to watch this and go, yeah, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't do my own migration.
Right.
It doesn't sound like a good idea, you know, because it's scary. And I've seen people try to do those migrations. It's tough.
Yeah.
You know? So they can get caught up and nothing's working and blah, blah, blah. So just hire a professional and get it done the right way.
Well, yeah. And that goes back into, do you want to continue to make money making your widgets? You know, then call somebody else for tech support. If you want to be a tech support person, then quit your job and go become a tech support person, because the reality is, if you're going to try to do both, you're probably not going to be, you know, very good at either, is really what it comes down to.
Well, it's kind of like the owner are usually the most technically interested.
Right.
And then they go do stuff, and then I have to charge them double to fix their problems.
Sure.
That is, I've seen that more lately. They've already done the admin part. Well, that was the fun part.
Right. Okay.
I'm going to go set up accounts. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we have problems because they did it wrong. Or I've already just seen the funkiest stuff.
Right.
And then they don't tell you either. So then you got to go in and go, wait, something's wrong here. You know, and I have to go figure it out and go, oh, I see. You've been on trial for a year. Trial Office 365, doing everything in SharePoint for a year under trial. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the kind of little stuff I find out. Nice. And just the different versions of Outlook that they're using and things don't work and all the little stuff. And so that's why I recommend to techs on my show, before you start diving in, even if you understand it, is to kind of tread lightly and be careful. Because if you don't know what you're doing, learning is if you learn on the client's dollar, you have to make sure you tell them that.
Right.
Yeah. I had to do it my first job and my second. I mean, it was not easy to say to a client, look, I'm dying to learn this. Will you let me do it? And I won't charge you very much.
Right.
It's like humbling. But that's how I had to do it.
Well, I think that's how I'm kind of wary of tech sometimes that say, hey, I know everything under the sun and I can repair any problem. Because I've heard a lot of senior techs over the time, you know, that I've been in business. And there are things that I figured out that they had no clue. And I'm like, and it wasn't fun. It's trial and error, and you got to sit here and figure it out. And it's a lot of that information is just not known. And even if it is known, you're not keeping all of it in your head. So you really have to if you kind of niche yourself into what you like to do and what you're good at, and then really concentrate on that, I think you can do a lot of good business. And you'll be an expert in that area. And a lot of times, you know, as technicians, man, we're all over the place. You know, we've got, you know, hey, I've got a problem with Java. Hey, I've got a problem with, you know, this person can't shrink their pictures, or, the HP printer driver is not downloading. It crashes every time it goes to load. I mean, these weird things that come up and we go, it worked on the other computer just fine, but not this one.
That's right.
It doesn't make any sense.
That's the problem I'm having with this SharePoint, Jeff.
Right.
It's because, first of all, you got to remember that people have different computers, different operating systems, different updates being done, different versions of Outlook, Office 365. Office 2013. I have to always say the right words. Yeah, it's no different. And it's just software.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of half the problem, is there's no tutorial for a tech to go, I am going to learn it. And where do I start? Because really, you just have to dive in. So on my show, Understanding Office 365, I'm going to just talk about the marketing of what to buy. That's an hour-long show plus alone. Because then I might do a second one after that about what you should sell. Your easiest sale is going to be Exchange. Now, people have problems understanding the DNS aspect of it. It's not everybody's cup of tea to understand it. Do you know how long it took me to understand that?
I don't know. A long time?
I had to ask around without looking stupid. Like, I would kind of tease my website friends. Like, I don't know what this stuff is. What is that? I don't know. What is DNS? And they'd be like, blah, 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 blah. It's this, this, and that, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, I don't get it. So finally, somebody walked me through it, and I'm like, oh, well, it's only three things I have to just click an update button for. I can handle that.
Now we're talking, now, for anybody that doesn't, we are talking about domain name servers, correct?
Yes, and when you log into the control panel of the website from the company that you're doing the migration for.
Okay.
That's actually how you make the servers talk to Microsoft Exchange servers, is you have to go update a text record first, which kind of makes Microsoft servers go, yep, we can work with that record. If the text record does not get approved, Microsoft won't approve you to have an Office 365 seat first.
Okay.
Okay, because I don't know, whatever, who knows why. They usually all get approved. Then once that's done, then they send you the credentials to create a Microsoft account.
Okay.
And then you can go in and buy as many seats as you need and all that stuff. And then when you do the actual migration, which I used to get really nervous, Jeff, because you know why? I was like, people's email is going to be down for days if I mess this up.
Right.
You know? But in all the years I've been doing it, the only leg I've had is about a 2-hour leg. So don't panic. They take eventually. I had one today that took 10 seconds. Poof, done. I mean, it's usually quick. It's usually the crappier companies that take longer.
Now, what DNS are you pointing the Exchange server to or Exchange to?
Actually, you log into the website control panel and you update the CNAME record.
Right.
That's standard.
Yep.
You set it to autodiscover.blahblahblah.com. And then the MX record needs to be updated to, I'd see this all the time and I still don't memorize it. It's like mailprotection.domain.outlook.com.
Right, right.
It's pretty standard. So really you just have to update two records. Then you delete the old MX records and the old CNAME.
Gotcha.
And once those are deleted, then I go and log into their Office 365 control panel, hit their Outlook, do a test email. If you're with a good company, usually it takes real quick.
Okay.
Then email's delivering. Then you're like, sweet, we're on. And, you know, I used to get real excited. Now I'm just like, it's just job. It's just the job. You know,
it
I used
works.
To get excited. Yeah. I used to get so excited to do these. And now I'm like, I can do it in like 2 hours. And, you know, it's really becoming like virus removals to text.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I could outsource the whole thing and just be a manager of it. Jeff, I used to think this was like really super serious work, and I'm like going, yeah, not really.
it's a learning curve, right? So you're learning something new and you get really good at it and it becomes your area of expertise. And that's, you know, I mean, I think we all do that with certain things, you know.
Yeah.
People laugh at me because whenever I say I can take a laptop, tear it down in about 10 minutes, they're like, well, it takes me like 20. And I'm like going, I don't know. I said, but I got really good at it. You know, I've got a good screwdriver and I'm able to take it apart in 10 minutes and I can reassemble it in the same amount of time, you know? So, it's just something I've done so often that I became an expert at it, you know? And that's with anything that we do.
Oh, well, that's become me with iCloud. This guy called in the other day. He had a bunch of Outlook little snaggy problems. I was about at the 20-minute mark. And I was like, oh, what is this doing in your calendar? And he goes, iCloud? I go, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I'm thinking about doing that iCloud. And I was like, well, you know, he paid for the hour. So I was like, well, let's go set it up real quick. And he goes, oh, really? I was like, yeah, we got time. I mean, I literally had it done in 51 minutes, which is a miracle for me. Because it really takes a long time to configure two or three devices and, you know, get everything set up and everything.
Sure.
I think the guy thought I was just high on speed because I literally just blazed through that job. And I was like, there you go. Thank you for your business. That'll be $130.
Nice.
But he was so thrilled because he didn't have a way to synchronize his calendar and contacts from his iPhone.
Right.
I was like, oh, I'll help you. Because he called with other problems. Now that was a bonus for me. He'd already paid me for the time.
So now when you're synchronizing your contacts and Outlook or your contacts in your email and your calendars and stuff like that. So that's all done through Exchange, correct?
Well, if you have Exchange, then your email, contacts, calendar, notes, and tasks and reminders all synchronize with, now of course, the iPhone is the favorite.
Okay.
Android is not the favorite, but it works.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of dread when people have Androids and I have to set them up. They're so always different.
Yep. Yeah.
But most of my clients are iCloud, iPad people. So then everything synchronizes. I help them set it up on their phone. And then iCloud, which is basically on every single iPhone, and you can install it to be as part of your Outlook. It's kind of like a mini server of sorts. I don't recommend you syncing mail through it, just calendar and contacts and whatever else you want, photos and music. Then there's also Outlook.com, which is a mini Exchange server. It actually does mail, contacts, and calendar. But a lot of people only use it for the calendar and contacts portion because, what do you bet, they have Gmail.
Right.
Or, and that doesn't synchronize well with Outlook, so they had to go to other something else.
Or an Android phone. See, it would be no good to me to keep my contacts in Outlook for any reason because that doesn't help if I get another Android phone. So,
well, there is an app, though, called – it's not an app. It's a software download called GSyncIt. That yes. is the that's the Gmail best friend for Outlook.
Gotcha.
Really. It's $20 one-time purchase. I've set a bunch of people up on it.
Okay.
You know, Jeff, when people call in, it's let me tell you the stories I have. I'm using Outlook. I have Gmail. I have an Android phone and an iPad. And I'm using iCloud and I'm doing this and I've got that going on. And they've got like 10 different technologies.
Sure.
So it's up to me to figure out, A, is how much time do I want to spend on this job? One, because those can be 2 to 4 hour nightmares if you do it the wrong way.
Right. Okay.
And it's expensive. So I try to do an analysis of all these devices, figure out the best thing to fix them, either put them on Exchange or set up the GSyncIt or the iCloud or Outlook.com. I mean, sometimes I've had to run two together. People have so many devices and so many messed up things that shouldn't be together.
Right, right.
But they make it work until it breaks, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. And they're in a panic. And you know what they always do, Jeff? They always call Microsoft first. That gets them nowhere.
Really? Okay.
Then the next thing is they go to Apple Store and sit right around the little genius bar and have their little Apple cocktails. Okay? That is a failure too because those people don't understand email.
Right. Okay.
And they think they're all fancy. Oh, just put it on the iCloud. I'm like, no. You can't just put stuff on the iCloud every time. They don't know that there's an Outlook at home on the desktop computer that ain't going to work. Then people start Googling for help. And that's when they read my blogs and call me. Because they're frustrated. Oh. Literally. I'm like, yep, I bet you I know your story. You've already, you know, been to Apple, called Microsoft. Yep, yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest with you. It almost seems to me, and a lot of people will laugh at this, but when I a long time ago, I had a Microsoft Zune, which was basically an MP3 player.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was the best MP3 player. It blew the iPod away any day of the week.
Now
people will disagree with me, but it was very easy to. It was very intuitive, very easy to pick up. I almost imagine that Windows Phone would be the same way. And I've always wanted to have, because I'm a Microsoft person. I use Microsoft all the time on my desk. That's what I'm going to use. It works for me. But I almost would like to have a Microsoft phone or a Windows phone that would do all the syncing and all that stuff simultaneously. But there's just a lot of things that they're missing still that, you know, Gmail has. So that's kind of where I'm kind of stuck where I almost missed my teeth cleaning appointment today until my phone dinged me and Google Now came up. Hey, you got to leave right now if you want to make your appointment. Okay. And I love the, you know, things like that.
Well, you know, like I said, I think I've had, let's see, one client with a Windows phone ever.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm not even kidding you. The first thing I usually say when someone calls in, I always go, okay, so you have an iPad and iPhone, right? And they go, yeah.
Gotcha.
Outlook people love iPhones and iPads. It is so rare if I get an Android person. And when I do, I have to send them off to my vendor to help with the phones because usually they have to do some funky configuration on it to get it to work. It works, but it's just not easy because Androids are for Google people.
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah, so anyway, I've become like a little iPhone freak because it's my money.
So what you're saying is when Apple people rail against Microsoft, what they're really saying is we love Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah, I think Apple did the smart thing by adding the Exchange button on their phone because they knew that they would be out of the market if they didn't have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because Android is anti.
Right.
You know, they're not going to play the game at all. At least Apple was like, you know what? We want to be a player, you know, so they play.
Right. And that was their only way into the yeah. you know, business world anyway. So no, that makes sense. And
now if Windows Phone took over more market share, I'd go get a Windows Phone in a heartbeat. But I mean, it's just a waste.
Right.
I don't need it. I have a phone I spent, you know, whatever on. But they don't even market that phone hard at all.
Right. Well, and if you're happy with an iPhone, that's fine. That's, you know, and that works for you. You wouldn't catch me dead with an iPhone myself, but that situation will never, you know, it will never work for me, but I'm nerdy. I'm techie. You know, I like what I like. And quite honestly, the reason I actually like the Android phone is because it really reminds me of the Windows operating system. I know I'm going to get some hate mail over this, but it's true. Because if I can do one thing in Microsoft Windows, I can do that one thing 15 different ways. Well, guess what? In my Android phone, I can do the same exact thing. I can do one thing 15 different ways, however I want to do it. And I'm good with that. But
you are such a nerd, Jeff.
I know. But, you know, it takes a lot of effort and time to figure out all these things, right? So
you and I do on my phone, text, phone. Hold on. I do have an app on here. I do texting, which I don't like. But I did get the iPhone 6, so at least I can see it.
Okay,
cool. I do phone texting, I do phone and mail. And I do have the weather app, which I think came with it. And I do Wells Fargo and Tinder for my man shopping.
Okay.
And Tinder, I tell you, is like hot or not. Just a side note for people. For those who remember hotornot.com, it's a fun app.
Okay.
But anyway, but yeah, the iPhone is not for people that want to, you know, mess around with their phones and reconfigure it and dig into the
right.
guts of it. They're for simple folk like me.
Right, right.
That's me. I just want to do a few things. I hate apps. I don't do them. I have enough apps on my software on my computer, you know?
Right, yeah.
You know what, though? If I need software, I'll spend $200-$300 on software. No problem.
Right.
But give me something on the phone, I won't buy it.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. And that's good that Apple did go that route to, you know, make a seamless transition between, you know, the corporate environment versus the, you know, the residential environment.
Yeah, I did the iPhone 4 and it had Exchange on there right away. So I don't even know what version it goes back to. But you know what I got to tell you, Jeff, is that they were smart and added the Outlook.com too on this.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was a sweet little delight to see because I was I don't think I saw it right away on the iPhone 4. It said other. You had to pick other. But now it actually has its own button.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's awesome because they're really giving Microsoft the love there by two buttons.
Right. No, that makes sense. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But of course, iCloud's at the top.
Right.
Of course.
Well, of course. So some people will use the iCloud for syncing just their contacts and, you know, like you said, pictures and anything other than email. And then what you'll do is you'll set them up with Outlook so that they can use Exchange and actually they will use that for syncing their email.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I do is I just don't jump and throw Exchange down everybody's throats because if you've got somebody that's like on AOL and they have it on their phone and they have it on Outlook, they're not going to, you know, do Exchange, of course. That's when I'm like, you know what, let's just set up Outlook.com real simple for you because it's on your phone and it's on Outlook. You know, it takes me about an hour to configure it. The Exchange is for business domain company email only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So like, you know, I judge people by their businesses. You'd be surprised. A lot of businesses are just like, yeah, we're ready to get off this crappy old IMAP and they want team sharing calendar. And that's the big thing.
Okay.
They want to see each other's calendars.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. Because if you're working in business with other people and you've got, you know, you're putting down appointments, you've got to know, you know, what appointments are already filled, you know, that type of thing. So,
yeah, they want to, just see when your availability is. And now the big thing is they want public shared calendars. Well, that's no problem. Have you ever seen those, Jeff?
No, I haven't.
Well, a public calendar is basically like a little, just a extra calendar for the team to share.
Okay.
But people are so mobile driven now that they want it on their phones. Well, Apple hasn't come up with a way to add the public calendar on their phone.
Okay.
So that's unfortunate, but I've come up with a solution from a guy online where I've read his trick and I even made a video and gave him credit. Basically, just buy an Exchange mailbox for the team called Shared. And everybody can add it to their phones then as a just fifth or whatever mailbox. It's $5 a month, you know. And then you turn off mail and contact syncing, so it just has the calendar only. People love it.
Oh, that's really a great idea.
Yeah. I can't say I can claim that.
Okay. But yeah, that's good information right there.
Well, if you go Google how to set up a public calendar on an iPhone, there's nothing. It's all just third app hogwash that don't work.
Okay.
I mean, none of it works. And then this guy was like, but do this. And I was like, winner. I love this guy. That was so ingenious to just say, add a new mailbox.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. And for $60 a year, a team loves that, you know?
Right.
Everybody is so mobile now. Got to have everything on you.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, how many people actually, you know, are actually working inside of an office anymore? You know?
Oh, except for me. I do all day. Yeah, I know. A lot of people, though, they just want it with them at dinner and wherever they go. Got to have it. Got to have it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I did notice, I was looking at your website, and I noticed you also did a update to your website, and maybe you've done this update a while back. I'm sorry, I haven't looked at it in a while, but since the last time I've been on your website, it looks like you've done some different changes to it.
I just refreshed it. It gets old.
Okay.
I basically put up a thinner banner.
Yep.
Which it didn't dawn on me that it was hogging all my space up, because when people would fill out my client agreement form, they would have a mistake and the banner was so big that it wouldn't show them that, and they'd scroll down and it was annoying.
Okay.
Well, I didn't even think about how big it was because I'm on a huge monitor, and all of a sudden I was like, dang, that thing's big.
Right.
And then I cleaned up some of the toolbars and I added on some call to action graphics on the side. And then I changed my main page to be my services and a contact us form at the bottom.
Right. I noticed that. Yeah. You got your service and pricing, daily monitoring plan, service purchase agreement. I mean, everything's right here.
Go check it out on a phone. It looks awesome.
Okay.
Like when people Google whatever and find my page, it's all chop, chop, chop there. Fill out the form. You know, it's a lot better than trying to drill around a website on a phone. I think right now I'm at like 35% of my visitors are coming from a phone right now or a mobile device.
Yep.
Yeah,
I would have to say the same. Yeah, mine's right around 30%, I think.
Yeah, so you got to kind of go for the times there. I'm just going to look it up real quick. Is that called behavior in Google Analytics?
Okay.
Or acquisition, I think, right? I don't know. Anyway, the site, and you know, I did most of it myself. I did hire a bunch of Fiverr people to make the graphics. I did the banner, which I love it.
Okay, very good.
I'm handy with Microsoft Word that way, Jeff.
Yeah. You know,
I can outdraw you.
You know, it's funny because I was I use the Adobe products, and I was using Adobe Photoshop and different things, and I have Adobe Illustrator and all that stuff, and I went to make a flyer for my business, and believe it or not, I ended up using Publisher to make my flyer. It was just easier. And I made a, you know, cool flyer that did what I needed, had the graphics on there and stuff, and I had it done, you know, within a short period of time. So,
oh yeah, I still do Microsoft Word. I've been doing it for 12 years that way. I'm just used to it.
Okay.
But the website, I didn't really I just changed up a little bit just to give it a refresh. I kind of let go of an old designer and I wanted all his garbage off there.
Gotcha. Well, I see all your prices and stuff are right up front too. So, I think that I don't think you always had that there, did you?
No.
Okay.
I tried something new. Well, I had my blogs there before.
Right. Okay.
But then, now we're going to talk about this at the final note here of the show, is that I took off the blogs because I've been doing a lot of blogging for SEO.
Oh, okay.
And I really didn't want people to go see all these, like, you know, kind of pointless blogs that they're not looking for.
Gotcha.
That I'm doing for Google to help people find me. So I took that off. I took it off my navigation bar too. So now it's just basically a Google ranking feed. for the blog. I send it out to social media, but I don't have – it's hard to find.
Okay.
Gotcha. I hid it.
Okay.
Yeah, I should probably put it back up though. But I have – outside of the new show, I also have a Black Friday special for a new book I'm releasing. I don't know when this show will be up, but it's called Call That Girl's Guide to SEO for WordPress.
Oh, nice.
It's just a small little 12-page book, easy step-by-step guide on how I've been blogging to get higher ranks in Google.
Okay.
It really works well. And it's kind of like a methodology. You just have to follow step one, follow step two. You know, you really can't mess it up. If you're a tech, the book was created for you. Davina Stowers from Stowers Computer Services in Ohio helped me kind of with the final round of testing, and she allowed her data to be used in the book.
Oh, okay.
So literally a computer tech can just go ahead and copy and paste what she put in and just change your town and do everything. It should take a couple hours to do, and then you just sit and watch it, you know, sit on Google a little bit, and then hopefully if you enjoy what you did, you can start engaging in more day-to-day blogging to help your rankings get higher.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be out Thursday through Monday. It's always going to be available, but it's basically on sale for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. But it's a cute little book. It's the fifth book I've done.
Wow, you've done five books. That's amazing.
I know. I was like, man, I got a series that's serious.
Wow.
Well, a lot of the books have been just called bonus books, but they really, after Cyber Monday, they're all going to be up for individual sale.
Okay.
Because some people don't need to buy all five books, you know?
Right.
They just want one or two, and it's kind of like a la carting. So I'm going to have that after Cyber Monday. You can just pick and choose and buy what you want.
Gotcha. Well, unfortunately, I think this show is going to come out mid-December. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know what? We'll still have the link up.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it'll still be on sale, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we'll put that link in the show notes so that people can know about it, because that's great. A lot of people are asking questions about SEO and different things like that, mm-hmm. that they're trying to figure out and, you know, figure out how they can better do it. I've done mine all by accident and organically, and it just works for me. But yeah, I had no, yeah, I looked at all the different things, and I've had many, many companies call me and say, hey, we can help with your SEO. And I'm like, nah, it's all right.
Oh, you know what? I was so like pipe dreaming that I was going to run this little SEO company about a year and a half ago. I hired a guy, and me and him had all these plans. And then this guy totally buffed on me. A lot of website people do that. They just like, they're not communicative. I don't know, but he just like poof disappeared. And
oh, wow, okay.
When I finally got a hold of him, I'm like, really? We have like a little project here rolling, buddy. And you just like disappear on me and leave me with all the work, which isn't part of the game plan.
Right.
You know, so I just said, I'm done with it. But so the thing is, the little book though was such a cute little, it works, you know, I love the book. So I was like, I'm going to finish it up and make that my fifth. It's probably going to be my final book.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to, I think I'm going to, not 100% sure, but I think I'm going to take a break from tech writing and go get my master's degree.
Are you real? Okay, master's
degree. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's time to get higher educated, this girl. If I'm going to grow my company, Jeff, I'm doing it the right way. I want all the education I can get.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a break from the writing. So this will be the last book for a while anyway, so I can study and do some other fun things.
No, wait a minute.
I'll still do my show.
Are you still blogging?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're still writing then.
Oh, yeah. I'm just not going to write any more books. I blog like every day almost.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it's something, it's one of those things that you're really good at. So, yeah, that'll never go away. You'll always have the itch to, you know, get that information out there.
You know what? The blogging, I've been doing it since 2008. I've got 657 blogs out there.
Wow. That's
amazing. It's serious. Yeah. Well, Jeff, I'm at 50% of my work is now coming from Google.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Now, I do pay $100 for the ads a week, but that ain't bringing in all of it. That's just the ads. You know, they bring in probably two or three, but I'm doing like 10 jobs a week off Google. So it's worth it for me to blog.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I really work it. So the blogging and the marketing with Google is always going to stay there because that's part of the business. just for me personally, I'm going to take the break from writing books. You know, it's the book writing. It takes some time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to learn anything new right now. Like that. Okay. I want to learn other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's understandable. Well, yeah. Very cool. It sounds like you got a lot of different things going on and a lot of changes in your business. And it sounds like you're still doing great. And it's nice to, you know, see the different iterations of, you know, the show as you're producing it and making it work. And, you know, you're doing the video stuff now and, just seeing how you're even the transition in your business, you know, how it's working for you. So that's great.
Oh yeah. I'm happier. You know, I mean, I was just talking to Chris today, in fact, about how I was like, you know, futuristically, you know, I was doing a comparison of how much tech work I'm, you know, servicing versus the Outlook Office 365. Huge shift compared to last year.
Right.
I mean, just because the marketing's changed, my interest has changed, my passion has changed. And I think, you know, as a tip for people that are like maybe sick of one thing, it's like you just can't jump into the other without a transitional phase.
Right. Right.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, Chris was, he was saying something like, what would happen if you retired? I was like, I don't even know. Like, well, what happened? Like, what happens when you do that? Like, you just stop, you know, but I think I just transform into what I want to do next.
Oh, exactly. I think, you know, if you're in a position where you can be doing what you want to do and how you want to do it, I think that's really everybody's dream. Now, you know, with that being said, is it always easy? Absolutely not. But
oh God, no.
It's, you know, it is a learning experience. It is interesting. It can be fun at times. It can be frustrating at times, but I think it's still worth it if you can be your own boss and do your own thing the way that you want to do it. And you know what? You can pick yourself up from your own mistakes and you can, you know, slap yourself on the back, you know, when you do good. And that's good. You know, I think that's really what business is all about.
Oh, Jeff, I cried twice last week. I've been in this business 7+ years. I still break down and cry sometimes out of frustration. It never ends. There's no perfect life. I think I still learn a lesson twice a day.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, and some days I'm wondering, would I be better off in the corporate world? And then most of the time I go, no. I think I'd be bored silly.
Yeah.
Being trapped down by creativity from other people.
Exactly. This way you can do it yourself and figure out what works and what doesn't. And that's, you know, again, you know, it's one of those things, being your own boss. That's the key. I think the key
for everybody.
Yeah. To, you know, to happiness, to a certain extent. And I think learning, is another one. You know, I feel that if you're not learning, you're basically wasting away. So.
Well, some people don't want to learn, Jeff, and they like things as is, and that's their life. I worked with a lot of those people at some corporate jobs that just did the same crap day in and day out, and I always kind of felt like I was trying to build my career, but honestly, I didn't feel like I had a career as a help desk technician because I was kind of there.
Right.
I was at my third level. I was like Outlook third level, help desk third level. I was like, I can't go any higher. And what's next? Server? Server work does not include customer support, really. So I was trapped. I was like, I don't know what to do.
Right.
Like, and then I got fired from the right job and I was like, time to go on my own.
There you go.
Let's take advantage of that unemployment and get this thing rolling.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You have a great story. You know, of the different things you've done over the years and, you know, and not only that, but how you've helped different people out in the industry. Yeah. You know, a lot of times just for free, just to be there and, you know, be a support. I know, you've helped me out in the past with a couple things and I definitely appreciate it. And I'm sure everybody else out there does. I'll tell you what, we're going pretty long in the show here and I think we've covered a lot. So,
oh gosh, Jeff, I mean, you could yap for hours.
I know
you're a good host, man. You just make it flow. It's funny is I'll be nervous to record my own show, but with you, I'm like 8 o'clock. I'm ready. I'm like, I don't even get nervous. I don't want a cocktail. I'm just like, let's yap it up.
I appreciate it. Well, I hope I make everybody feel comfortable that comes on the show. So
you do.
I'll tell you what, if people wanted to find you, what's the best way to find you and get in contact with you?
Well, first, let's have them go to my youtube.com/callthatgirl. That's where I put up videos now of just little tutorials. And my show is going to be there. And if you want the audio, just subscribe to the Podnuts/CTG channel because that's audio only. you want to email me, it's lisa@callthatgirl.biz. And I just don't even want people to follow me on social media anymore. I'm so over Facebook. I'm about to deactivate my account again. It's enough.
You know, it's funny. It's one of those things where Facebook to me is more for, you know, friends and family. I don't really use it for, now I have some technicians that have followed me on it, but I don't really use it for that. I use the, my favorite one is the Google Plus right now, because that's where just the people that I interact with as far as technicians and computer repair companies. I don't get a lot of the, you know, I don't get the Oprahs and all that kind of other stuff on there. So I definitely understand.
G Plus, though, I got ruined the first week it opened, Jeff. It was when all the Podnuts guys were all hanging out hardcore and they're all like, let's all G Plus, you know? And I went and imported in my contact list like a dummy. And I had 5,000 people within a week in my G Plus, and I haven't been able to add anybody. I thought I told you this. I haven't been able to add anybody in two some years. Because I capped out.
So now you got to create a page and you know, move them over to the page.
It's turned into I just publish stuff and people just share and I just hope for the best.
Okay? There you go. You're too popular, Lisa. That's what it is.
Oh, Jeff, that is just, you know what that is? It's social media hoarding. It was for me to go import my contact list because I was like trying to chase numbers and be like, oh, I'm going to be the coolest person. You know what's funny is that there's some people on there with 100,000 people that follow them and they can't get a single reshare. So it comes down to not popularity. And not how many numbers you have. It's the quality of your stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I've seen this one girl suffer. She's like, I'm so popular. I've got 100,000 people. I'm like, it don't matter. I get three of the biggest YouTubers to share my stuff. It's good stuff.
There you go. Know? There you go.
It's all right.
Well, that's very cool. Well, I appreciate you coming out and sharing with us again this time. And it was lots of fun.
It was a pleasure, Jeff, as always.
Thank you. Well, you guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. Yes, those are my two social media things for this show anyways. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And if you want to leave a voicemail, we'll always read the voicemail or read the voicemails. We'll always listen to the voicemails on the show and answer questions and comments and also read the emails. But the number for the voicemail is 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for supporting this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. That link will help us out a little bit, and we just appreciate that. Also, if you guys could leave us a rating and review over on iTunes, that would be also very helpful. And you guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I just want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. And we'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Hi, folks. Lisa here from Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. Did you know that I have a brand spanking new show coming out called Call That Girl's Office 365 Show? You can check it out right here on the Podnuts Network by going to podnuts.com/CTG. Listen to all of my day-to-day problems and solutions I have with Outlook, third-party apps, and Office 365.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.